to welcome the Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And let me introduce the crew. Guys, if you don't mind waving for the video portion of our show, we have Lieutenant Randy Sutton, all the way from Las Vegas, formerly with Las Vegas Metro Police Department, the founder of the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org. And so thanks for being on the show, Randy. Appreciate it. Also, Sergeant Jamie Borden with Critical Incident Review, another distinguished law enforcement background as well. And now he's helping cops out in a world of hurt all over the country. So we appreciate what you're doing for them during the in the court system, man. It's a beautiful thing. And I love the precedent that you're setting. A shout out to our sponsors. You know, our title sponsor is Gauls at Gauls.com, ComplyTechnologies.com, our satellite sponsor. We have GunLearn.com, MyMedicare.live, SafeguardRecruiting.com, our streaming sponsor. And thanks to them, we're streaming to over a million followers right now on social media during the live show. And finally, TwoBells.com. They built our new online store at LeoRoundtable.com. Go to our website, check out the online store. You can buy cool gear like the shirt that I'm wearing, and the prices are rock bottom. I spend what you guys spend. We don't make a dime off of anything in the store. We're just trying to get our gear out there. So please check that out. Also, a shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com. Thanks for carrying our content, Brian. Ray Diedrich, former lawman.com, and Travis Sheets with LawOfficer.com. Thanks to all those entities for helping make this show happen. And now, what in the world are we going to be talking about today? You know, our first story, I got it from Coffee and COVID. Justice Department charges the light rail attacker with a federal crime. I just threw this in because I got some new scoop this morning, including a judge that's going to that's in the news. It's not in a good way either. We've also got three big wins in court for us, for the American people that we're going to be talking about. And then we got cops, teams with the Wounded Blue, the champion officer wellness. I love it. We got Boise police shooting an armed robbery suspect that was ruled justified. And then we got body cam showing we got Indianapolis police officer shooting a suspect who killed two people over a $40 dispute. We've got the mayor in Illinois telling CNN that he turned off public safety cameras in defiance of ICE operations because he believes they're coming to his town. We got a man with a large hatchet fatally shot by Phoenix officers outside of a IHOP of all places. I think the parking lot at the Walmart was full at the time. We got Port St. Joe officers shooting a woman who advances on them with a knife. And then we've got sheriff's office forced to release a man from jail because of competency laws. And this is what happens when you don't treat people for mental health issues and you don't have the resources to do it either. You throw them out in the general public and the population. Just crazy. So if you guys are ready, let's start off with the first story. Look, the first two stories, they have a tendency to be a little bit deeper. They're our main stories. This is coffeeandcovid.com. I've been preaching about this site for a while. There's an attorney in Gainesville, Florida, in my neck of the woods. They're north of me, but it's Jeff Childers. He's a good guy. He's got started off talking about things in 2020 when COVID came out, and he was just making information available to people that was not readily available. I'm talking about stuff that got me kicked off of YouTube and stuff. And now he does political commentary and he grabs sources, legit sources from all over the place, but also left-leaning sources. So yesterday, according to Jeff Childers, the Department of Justice announced that it was wrestling DeCarlos Brown out of the Mecklenburg County judicial system, out of their warm embrace, he phrases it, in an official DOJ statement stating that the Justice Department charges light rail attacker with federal crime. So this single federal charge, he can get him the death penalty, and it's causing a death on mass transportation. Now, U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi promised that prosecutors will seek the maximum criminal sentence, stressing that Brown will never again see the light of day as a free man. And he talks about the security video. We got our female, Irana Zertiska, 23 years old. And, she came from Ukraine. She's a refugee. And she recently, she got a degree in art and restoration from the University of Kyiv. And then she wanted to become a veterinarian assistant. And she was living in a bomb shelter before she fled to North Carolina. And then she got employment at a local pizza parlor. And she's riding home from work last week in Charlotte's public light rail system. And then she gets attacked by this loser, DeCarlos Brown. And, I hope this guy never sees the light of day. And then he walks away from her after slicing, after cutting her throat, and he's dripping in her blood. And he exits and he says, "I got that white, B-I-T-C-H." And Democrats instantly denied that there was any racial aspect involved in the crime. And there was a groundswell of outrage filled social media because they're not, the corporate media is not covering it. And then finally, 18 days later, it took them before they started covering this stuff. So the DOJ charged Brown, ensuring that he won't get released again. and Republicans demanded the firing of Mecklenburg magistrate Teresa Stokes. This is where the story gets interesting. So she's a magistrate, not a judge, and they're supposed to be, they have handlers that are real judges. And so she's the most recent judge, according to this article, to inflict Brown back into the Charlotte community. And she's not even a lawyer, and it talks about her past. And you guys might be surprised to find out, according to the website, Mecklenburg has 38 listed magistrates. These are people that are supposed to be helping out judges with the caseload, including Mrs. Stokes, the judge in question here. She's a mental health services activist, an NGO parasite, according to article, who is utterly unqualified for the job. She got a law degree from Cooley Law School, but she couldn't even pass the bar exam. So there you go. Commentary on this one. Any surprises, guys? And Randy, I am wearing your shirt, by the way, as well. So
there is so much horror in this story. First of all, watching the videotape, if it doesn't give you nightmares, then there's something wrong with you. It was one of the worst things I've ever seen. Here is a perfectly innocent woman, a woman who loves to come to be an American, who is working three jobs, who is a benefit to our society and to her community, and this piece of human garbage, who never should have been out on the street, but was only out because of the liberal insanity that is overflowing in many of our cities and states, is released back into society to take this woman's life. And it's one of the most heartbreaking stories that I've seen. And there's a movement afoot now to be able to hold judges accountable for improper releases. It'll probably never get through, because that lobby is so powerful, but it is about time that we hold judges accountable, just like they hold cops accountable.
Didn't they correct me if I'm wrong, Chip, didn't that magistrate set up a GoFundMe on behalf of the suspect? Look into that.
Oh my gosh.
I didn't hear that.
Yeah. Wow. I was scrolling through Instagram for some reason and saw a post about somebody setting up a GoFundMe page for the suspect in that crime.
If she did that,
she's toast. There were numerous GoFundMe pages put up for that creature, but yeah. GoFundMe took them down.
Okay. I think one of them was from an official. So just double check me on that, but that just folds into the insanity that we're seeing that creates the lawless society that people are being forced to live in right now. And, you know, I just recently saw in attachment to this, somebody who has a hand in drafting legislature saying that police aren't here to prevent crime. They're here to solve crime. And this is one of the most absurd statements I've ever heard in my life. And this woman is a liberal on committees that is actually drafting legislation for our country.
You're talking about Jasmine Crockett.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow, she's got to be the only. So let me tell you this. The only person dumber than Jasmine Crockett are the people who are going to vote for her on the next election.
Wow. Well put.
Yeah.
Well put.
Yeah. Anyways, well, guys, yeah, it's terrible.
The young girl, and it breaks my heart, never had a chance. It's wow. But I wish we didn't have videos like this. Part of me wishes, but then the other part says that some people just don't believe it until they actually see it. And this is how bad the system's got. So we got some other wake up stories that we're going to be covering, but good commentary on that. Thank you, guys. And I don't know what, we don't necessarily have all the answers here, but we want to make the people, at least that are watching the show, among the smartest people in the room when it comes to these kinds of topics. And of course, the dire side, the consequences for action. So we've got about 30 seconds left before we go to our first commercial break, guys. So let me go in and whet the appetite, at least for the next story. It's a main story. We have three big wins in court. These are all at TampaFreePress.com, at TampaFP.com. You guys are going to love this stuff. So we have good news coming. So, stay, guys. Stick around. We got some great news coming up. We'll be right back.
My family only cares about one thing, that I come home safe. At Gall's, every order begins with a promise. Made with purpose. Stitched for support. Backed with pride. Answered by dedicated hands. Delivering the standard you have sworn to uphold. We serve more than the mission. We serve the person. Each piece is engineered to help get our first responders through the shift and back home safe.
Welcome back, Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We're joined by Lieutenant Randy Sutton with the Wounded Blue and also Sergeant Jamie Borden with Critical Incident Review. And guys, we've got three big wins in court this week at tampafp.com. So U.S. Court of Appeals, they deny a petition against AG Pam Bondi upholding removal to Liberia. So this is a good win. So the petition was against her, and they shot it down. So United States Court of Appeal for the Eighth Circuit now, they denied a petition for review for Philip Myers upholding a Board of Immigration Appeal decision that denied his motion to reopen removal proceedings. So the system is working. It just takes a while sometimes, but the ruling filed in September, on September the 8th, actually affirms that Myers, he's a native of Liberia, was unlawfully removed from the United States. So anyhow, we'll see what happens with that. Supreme Court throws out a 90-year-old precedent allowing Trump to fire FTC commissioner. So again, we're talking about FTC on this one, but it could have underlying results for other firings. So Chief Justice John Roberts issued an administrative stay on Monday, and it put a 90-year-old Supreme Court precedent on the brink of being overturned. So the ruling made without explanation. It was on the emergency docket. It allows President Donald Trump to fire or to proceed with firing the Federal Trade Commission Commissioner Rebecca Kelly Slaughter, despite a lower court and the D.C. Court of Appeals having blocked the action. That was just last week. And the decision, here's where it gets interesting. This decision has significant ramifications for the independence of federal agencies. It could pave the way for Trump to fire the Federal Reserve Board member Lisa Cook. So that's where we're going with that. Now, the third one, U.S. Appeals Court, they affirm a federal firearm restriction, and this is for drug dealers or drug users and indicted individuals. So it's a significant decision for gun control advocates and Second Amendment rights proponents. Now, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit, they have affirmed the constitutionality of two federal laws that restrict firearm possession. So here's who it is. Here's who it affects. So its federal code prohibits firearm possession by unlawful drug users. And also the other one bars individuals under felony indictment from receiving firearms. So both those ones are covered and they've upheld it. Again, this is the U.S. Court of Appeal for the Ninth Circuit. So another good win in court. So I love the way that the pendulum seems to be swinging back to where it belongs. I see you're reaching, Jamie. Are you unmuting the mic?
Yeah, I have things to say about this because I know all of us are huge proponents of the right to carry and our constitutional rights regarding firearms. But from a law enforcement perspective, when I see things like this, you know, affecting our barometer, it certainly does increase the safety issues for officers. And normally when we get, you know, you look at case after case after case, somebody involved in a shooting, whether the suspect has a weapon, a firearm or a knife, you know, a lot of times there is the presence of methamphetamine or Oxycontin or some sort of, you know, illegal narcotic. And I think it is as big a proponent as I am, for the right to bear arms, I certainly do appreciate those components that make law enforcement safer.
Yeah. And you know what? It's not necessarily. And look, I think we would all agree that if a bad guy wants a gun, a motivated bad guy, they're going to get the gun, right? Whether Absolutely. It's breaking into a car or a house or whatever, or a gun store. These are charging components that will be used. I mean, that you can still lie. You can lie in a form about your mental health. You can get a straw purchaser to get the gun for you, or you can just steal the gun and get it. I mean, or you can 3D print a gun. I mean, so
yeah. Get a ghost gun, whatever it is.
Yeah. So these are tools for charging. But it also the optics of people being able to get guns and they've done it legally, you know, those optics aren't great either. So I you know, believe me, I don't like restricting people having guns unless it's like maybe a convicted felon or someone that's got mental issues. That just is common sense to me.
Absolutely. 100%.
So if you guys are ready, we've got a Wounded Blue article that we're going to be talking about next. So let's go ahead and jump that. They've got a beautiful picture of Randy Sutton on this. I'm looking at Randy on my left here on the screen and I'm looking at the picture.
It's AI.
I'm just thinking, you know, it's AI. I'm just thinking, man, if anybody hasn't got stock in Photoshop yet with Adobe, you need to start investing now. They did a great job. So Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com, cops teams with the Wounded Blue champion officer wellness. And it's great coverage for the Wounded Blue. So it talks about Lieutenant Randy Sutton, our very own Lieutenant Randy Sutton, founder of the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org. And it says that in the show of support for the nation's law enforcement community, the producers of the iconic television show Cops, that they are actually partnering with the Wounded Blue, a national nonprofit dedicated to supporting injured and disabled law enforcement officers and their families. And for people that don't know it, and look, people growing up like me, Randy's always been like a father figure to me because of watching him on the Cops when I was a young boy, like 2 years old. No, I'm kidding. Randy and I are close to the same age. But Randy is probably the most featured cop on the series Cops that there's ever been. It's amazing. And an amazing opportunity for him as well. So I love the relationship. You know, people, as we get older, people used to tell me life is all about relationships. And I was young and I was like, what are you talking? I didn't get it. Now at this stage in my life and for like the last 10, 20 years, I have seen it. Life is all about relationships. Randy can attest to that. He's got a special relationship with these guys. And now years later, the Wounded Blue and us law enforcement and guys that are suffering from like PTSD are benefiting from that. The collaboration aims to provide critical resources to officers in need by offering free attendance to the upcoming 5th annual National Law Enforcement Survival Summit. And that is huge. It's going to be in Las Vegas, Nevada from September the 22nd through the 25th. It's a 4-day summit and they're focusing on officer wellness and resilience. It's for the officers and the spouses as well, providing essential training in emotional, financial, physical, and career survival. And it's designed to help officers not only endure the challenges of modern policing, but to thrive in their careers and also in their personal lives. It talks about Morgan Langley, executive producer of Cops. Randy, I want to give you an opportunity to talk. So I've kind of like, you know, what, you know, I've kind of like thrown it out there and whet the appetite a little bit. If you can just tell us a little bit more in about 30 seconds.
Yeah. So Cops is such a huge supporter of the Wounded Blue. They've made it available for any law enforcement officer who's been injured in the line of duty to get in for free. They're paying for the registration, $400 basically. So we still have some openings. Any law enforcement officer who's been either injured physically or suffering from post-traumatic stress, come to the summit. It's unbelievable.
I love it. Well, guys, stay tuned. We're getting some more stuff coming up. Some great stuff, actually. Stick with us. We'll be right back. All right. Introducing Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com. And they're committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low ethics manner, utilizing their CD3, which stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Technology. Their flagship product, we all know by now, is called the Glove. It's helped officers, I was going to say, tens of thousands of times, but now they're up to over 250,000 deployments with absolutely no injuries and no deaths. I mean, that's a crazy stat. And you heard me correctly, no injuries. They've actually achieved non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm or conductive energy weapon, the Glove at ComplianTechnologies.com, they virtually eliminated weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and the revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already turned to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on solutions that's ever come along. So go to ComplianTechnologies.com today and tell them that Chip sent you. Again, that's ComplianTechnologies.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We are joined by Lieutenant Randy Sutton and also Sergeant Jamie Borden. Thanks for being on the show, guys. And, you know, we left off, we've been talking about a lot of things. Just got done talking about the Wounded Blue Summit that's coming up. So, guys, you need to check that out at thewoundedblue.org. We're getting ready to talk about a story that's got a video component. Look for Audible listeners. You're watching this from your favorite podcast or radio station. Please stay loyal to those outlets that are bringing you this good quality content. And return for that, we will describe in great detail what's going down so that you don't feel like you're missing out on anything. But if we cover something that you absolutely have to see in video, all you have to do is go to our Rumble channel called Leo Roundtable, because the very next day after we get done with the live show, our producer takes the live show, a copy of it. He'll embed every video that we talk about. He'll put pictures of the good guys and the bad guys that pop up as we talk about them. He puts it on a Rumble channel at 9 o'clock Eastern time the very next morning. Our live shows are Monday through Friday, and these appear at 9 a.m. Eastern time, Tuesday through Saturday on a Rumble channel. So this very first story, rumble.com, This Is Butter is the name of the channel. Port St. Joe officers, they shoot a woman who advances on them, or advances on the officer, and she's got a knife.
Uh-uh. No, ma'am. Unlock the door! Unlock the door now! Lock it!
Suspect Sam.
She got a taser. We did taser.
So we're in Gulf County, Florida. So that is not in Tampa where I'm at. It is in Gulf County. So I'm just kind of separating myself from the chaos. Okay. So police officials say that after 41-year-old Tequila Walker charged at officers with a 16-inch fillet knife. And let me tell you, there are still shots of that knife. I would say, yeah, it qualifies as a 16-inch fillet knife. It's a nasty looking knife. Like, look, Randy's even like grimacing. When I saw the edge on that, the edge on that, and I would not want to be cut with that knife. But anyhow, a 16-inch fillet knife, they were left no choice but to respond with force. So Tuesday morning, Port St. Joe police, and this is up in the panhandle of Florida in Port St. Joe. In fact, we used to have my family have beach property up there for quite a while, and the kids were supposed to get it, and the parents sold it before my dad died. They sold it, so the kids aren't going to be living in Port St. Joe or anything anymore. But anyhow,
touche.
Port St. Joe police, they released the body cam footage of the shooting and the interactions leading up to the incident. So the video documents several points of contact made with Walker, and we'll call her our bad girl throughout the day, after she was involved in multiple, and I stress multiple, hit and run incidents. So the footage also shows attempts made to disarm her with a taser, but Port St. Joe Police Chief Jake Richards says that Walker was unfazed by the taser. Now, the video shows multiple angles. It shows multiple angles too, by the way, but multiple angles of Walker getting out of the driver's side of her car just seconds after she ends up being tased. I wasn't really sure. It says that she exits the car after being tased, but I really don't see from the video how that could have happened. Maybe briefly when she opened the door, maybe you guys saw something I didn't see.
I think he did it through the window.
You think he did? Really? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So
he got her.
She raises the knife over her head when she opens up the door, and she charges at Sergeant Morrison, who responds with gunfire. We've all seen it. They've got a freeze frame of her. That would be a great first, like a screensaver on your computer, right? It was just like a great one. So, but anyhow, another officer also fired a shot. She sustained two gunshot wounds and ended up being treated at the local hospital. Two wounds. Wow. So some witnesses to the shooting claimed that it was not necessary. In the body cam footage, you can hear Sergeant Morrison responding to the reactions. And he says, "Hey, she came at me with a knife. What the H do you expect me to do?" Sergeant Morrison can be heard saying to the bystanders. So he was obviously and had reason to be a little bit upset. So that said, Randy, you want to start us off, and then we'll let Jamie go.
I'm letting Jamie go on this one.
Okay. Wise move.
You guys are too much. Listen, and from our perspective, because we understand police work, is there any question that the use of lethal force in that situation, and I'm asking both of you, is there any question in your mind that this is controversial in any way? There's no question. But here's the problem. We have a bystander that said it was unnecessary, right? We've got the video that produces this component, and I have a case where a subject drew a firearm, pointed it out the window at police officers. They opened fire after tasing him in the front of the truck, after attempting to deploy canine, after all of these attempts to mitigate levels of force. The case is literally based on the fact that the subject pointed the weapon at officers as a result of them tasing him. And I'm not kidding you. Now, and here's the problem with these narratives is that, you know, we've got a bystander that says it's not necessary. We've got people that understand that this lethal force was absolutely necessary, that they understand that this is multiple hit and runs. This woman is coming out of that vehicle, right? They aren't going to let her continue her tirade. All of these things add up that we understand. But the narrative has to be controlled at that earliest attempt. It's not an escalation of force to use the taser. It is an attempt to de-escalate, to reach the goal of de-escalation through the use of that taser. And very rarely do we articulate it like that to take the wind out of the sail of these arguments. They ended up responding to a deadly attack in this thing that police officers understand, but the public may not. It's so important for our officers out there that are involved in these critical incidents, or these critical uses of force where critical decisions are being made, to articulate why you did something and why something else wasn't reasonable, because all of the language stems from exhausted other resources, other potential use of other implements. All these things come up, and it really latches back to how we explain our experience in that event, because that is 100% justified. They were responding to a deadly attack. Anyways, not to beat a dead horse here, the use of force is 100% justifiable by all accounts, including the department's accounts, but I can guarantee you there's going to be a lawsuit in this.
So I have a question, if you don't mind me jumping in here, Randy. So at what stage do they clean up the verbiage? I know when Danny King's on the show, and Danny King, you know, works with you a lot, he talks about officers getting themselves in the grease because of what they either put or what they don't put when they document the police report. That's at the initial stage. Of course, you know, if we go to the court and all that stuff, there's other opportunities to interject certain arguments. But at what stage do you recommend the officer that uses or deploys this less lethal explain it like the way you described?
Right now. I'm talking about the day it happens. And this is a thoughtful, tedious process, because here's the problem, Chip. If it comes up a year later, 6 months later, a year later, 2 years later on the stand, then now it's an excuse or an advocation. And at the beginning, it's an explanation and an education, right? You're explaining and educating people why you did what you did. And this is an important part of report writing for officers. We are terrible at writing reports. It's not the fun part of the job. We know what happened. It makes sense to us. We put very little in that report. Stop doing that. Get your mind around the fact that you've got to write an articulate, thoughtful report that explains your experience. It doesn't have to be police language and legalese. It's just got to be a true rendition of your experience and explaining why you didn't do certain things that led you to the need to do certain things, right? We leave that information off the table. I've got a whole article on our blog at Critical Incident Review that talks about leaving it on the table. Don't do that. The time is now. I don't want to clean up the language. I don't want to look at language after the fact and have to navigate that language to make a point. Don't cause me as an expert to have to do that. Make your point now.
Love it.
So I think this, part of the issue that we're seeing is that, you know, officers now have more opportunities to use less than lethal, different options here. And when you do that, you also give an excuse to the media and to those who are, you know, anti-law enforcement to give, well, what if? And those what ifs can have a dramatic effect on the officer and on the possibilities of prosecution. You know, the taser is seen by a lot of people as a panacea, and it is not. I was, you know, on the break, we were talking about this situation in New York City where this guy with a knife went into a precinct through a back door. I don't know why it was unlocked, but was confronted by a cop. He slashed her across the face, and then she fought him off. Why she didn't shoot him then, I don't know. And then he took off running, and this guy just tried to kill a cop, and they tried to deploy a taser against him, and then eventually wound up shooting him and killing him. But we're deploying the taser at the wrong times. We are thinking that it's always going to be effective, and it is not. And the public has been given the belief that the taser is the alternative to deadly force, and it is not.
And Randy, that's where the idea that de-escalation is not a tactic, it's a goal. And we use different implementations under the umbrella of that goal to reach de-escalation. And an officer might have to escalate force to reach the goal of de-escalation. And that, I want people to hang on that.
Excellent commentary, guys. We're going to wrap it up in a second, but we got a lot more to come up. Commercial break coming up. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. As law enforcement officers, we deal with guns and we deal with ammunition every day. It's what we don't know about them that gets us in the trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and disciplinary issues. But GunLearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending the live seminar at GunLearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialists like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also attorney Ken Appianco. Now, the course has had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since way back in 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and even police departments nationwide. Now, the founder, Daniel Kelly, has got a deal for you. If you have your own agency, if you're chief or sheriff, you can host a seminar for absolutely no cost. It's an amazing opportunity. You can go to GunLearn.com to get more information. Again, that is GunLearn.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by Lieutenant Randy Sutton and also Sergeant Jamie Borden. Sorry, Randy had to go briefly. He keeps an alligator in the bathtub, and from what I understand, it got out. It was getting loose, and he had to go wrestle that thing and take it down. You need to take some classes from Zach with FisherOrlandoBash.com. I will sponsor you for that class, Randy. That'll help you wrangle that sucker. Look, we just got done talking about a use of force, a female with a really wicked looking fillet. We have, you know, we fillet fish here in Florida, so that's where the those kinds of knives come in. But you know, Jamie was talking about the importance of documenting accurately and not the weight, and it'll help you out of the grease, and it makes it easier for guys like Jamie to do their job instead of coming in and like having to clean up a mess or having to say that you meant something or meant to say something that you didn't put down in the police report. And so the question I have for Jamie is that in this day and age, not virtual reality, but really artificial intelligence, that's where I'm going. You've got these companies that are offering to let AI write your police reports for you. But after hearing what the importance of what Jamie said, and do it now, even if there's going to be like mistakes and stuff, get it out now. We want to know what was going through your brain when you executed that use of force. How do you feel about what this AI, we got companies selling big agencies on this AI. It's going to make it easier. It's going to clean up, you know, report running time. It'll cut it in half, cut it in a fraction of what it would take the officer to run it down. I, for one, am a guy that likes to write my own stuff and I like to process it. So what does the future hold for AI, and how does that help or hurt guys like you that are expert witnesses in court that are trying to make sure that justice is served?
Well, AI is a, especially when we're talking about, and I'm not against AI. All right. I need everyone to understand that. However, it's got to be very cautiously applied. AI is a mechanical view, two-dimensional of what the video shows, what the radio traffic is. It takes all of this stuff. And yes, you will get a grammatically perfect report. But grammatically perfect is not something an officer can testify to. That report will use terminology that the officer may not have ever used. When they write this report, the sergeant looks at it. It looks and reads excellently for the report, but they don't know how that applies to what the officer experienced in that moment. And that's where the missing component's at. It's a great starting point. If you're using AI, I'm not here to tell you don't use AI. I'm here to tell you that AI, artificial intelligence, is only as good as actual intelligence. AI is driven by AI. And your actual intelligence, and I mean your experience on that scene, has got to be injected into that report, especially when we're talking about a critical decision-making point, because the video doesn't capture context. It doesn't capture perception. It doesn't capture tactile feel. It captures two dimensions of ones and zeros transferred into data that we look at that literally doesn't match the officer's experience. Be careful with it.
Wow. Yeah. You're ultimately responsible for what you write. So
every word. That's right.
Have there been legal challenges to the AI reports yet, Jamie?
There's always a challenge. And, you know, one of the things, like when I'm writing reports, I use AI to make sure that that what I'm saying, it flows and is articulate and it puts the semicolon in the right spot. I still don't know where to use a semicolon. I write 20 hours a day, right? So AI helps me out with that. I'm not an English major, but I do write reports. And yes, everybody uses AI, whether they know it or not. Every time you get on Google or whatever, Adobe DC, Word, they've all got an AI component and everyone relies on it. You just have to understand that you personally are responsible for every word and the ability to testify to every statement that's made in those reports. And that's where we're missing the boat. And it is treacherous. We've got to be aware of it. Just because a report looks good doesn't mean it reflects that officer's experience.
You know, when Randy asked that question, I was thinking the same thing. Boy, if I was a defense attorney and I found out that they used AI and there were some issues that I could point out with the report, or even just throw in that possibility.
They will use it to challenge you. They will absolutely use it. A report might say that the subject made a furtive movement, and the officer on the stand is then asked, what's your definition of a furtive movement? And think about that to yourself right now. If you're not pinning that to an actual event, what does furtive movement mean to you, right? And what that is a descriptor of the description of a subject reaching for a weapon in some capacity that somebody has referred to as a furtive movement. You'd better be able to define that term and give a definition of it on the stand if it's in your report. That's why it's important to give a description, not a descriptor. Those are things that are really having an effect on us on the stand and our ability to navigate these points.
All right, so we're going to title...
Now you know why... He is the expert when it comes down to critical incidents. And his book is amazing and should be read by every single cop in America.
I love it. Critical Incident Review. You know, I would love to be able to tell you guys that I actually did the cover, you know, but I did not. I did not. But yeah, when I see that book, that is the cover that I want to be responsible for creating, because it's just that sensational. So yeah, I love it.
Well, thanks, guys.
So we will have to title this. I'm going to tell producer Will to get a thumbnail and say description versus descriptor. You know, we'll just have to, you know.
And that's in my new book, Beyond the Frame, which is the component that talks about how video is used. It's called the subtitle is Bridging the Gap Between Reality and Digital Evidence. And really, that's what it is, using descriptions rather than descriptors. I don't want to see descriptors in there. I feared for my life. Nuh-uh. Describe why you feared for your life. Let me feel the fear that you experienced through the description you give me.
Hey, get with me. I'll do the cover for that next book, too. let's go.
I can see a very nerdy T-shirt coming from Jamie. Descriptor, not description.
Hey, look at this one. I literally wrote a book about it.
Oh my gosh, he's serious. Yeah.
Danny yep. King, my comrade Danny King made that shirt for me when I released this book.
All right, let's jump to Boise real quick. Rumble.com. This is Butter. Boise police shoot an armed robbery suspect. They ruled as justified.
Come on. Right here. He's behind the ship. Right there behind the ship.
So we got four Boise officers. This use of force happened September the 24th, 2024, so a year ago, and injuries to Adam Lee Cook, according to the prosecuting attorney, Matthew Fredvik. So here's what we got. We got the it identifies the officers involved. We have a corporal, and we have three officers. And Cook was identified as a primary suspect in armed robbery before the fatal encounter. He purposely evaded capture, recklessly eluding police officers, endangering the public. It escalates when he flees on foot through a residential neighborhood. He goes into the backyard of a family's home, and he hides behind a shed on the property. And that's where he was refusing to comply with the officer's commands to surrender. It's night out. Officer's got a long gun. And as soon as he puts the light on, the bad guy's like in a gun stance, holding what looks like, from where I'm at, there was no gun, but it looks like it. And they use lethal on him. And it's a fatal shot. Commentary on this, guys. We got a minute and 15 seconds.
I'll start out just because it's what I do. that is the exact example of how video was useful in identifying the context that the officer that drove their reasonable belief that this guy was armed. You don't answer your phone like this, right? And if you do, and you've just robbed someone, you're probably going to get shot. This whole movement, contextually speaking, is what drove the officer's decisions. And thank goodness it was captured on video, because that is the component that drove the officer's reasonable belief in the context based on their perceptions and their expectation in that moment that drove decisions and actions that ended up in a result, performance, and behavior. That's the common thread theory. And thank God that video was there, because that video supported all of that when we apply the common thread. All the crap we talk about video, we need it. We just have to be aware that it's there, be aware of our etiquette, and use it absolutely as a piece of the evidence, not the entire evidence.
Totally agree. Quick words, Randy.
There's no way I can say anything that will compliment that.
The only bad thing.
I'm just going to shut the hell up.
The only bad thing about having Jamie Borden on the show is that he sucks the knowledge out of the room, you know, and there's like nothing else intelligent left to say, you know. I can say some dumb stuff, you know, but hey, thanks so much to Lieutenant Randy Sutton for being on the show. Congratulations on the summit coming up as well. Guys, remember the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org. Also, Sergeant Jamie Borden with Critical Incident Review at criticalincidentreview.com. Make sure you guys check that out. I do want to mention the Wounded Blue again, Lieutenant Randy Sutton's 501 C3 that's helping cops out in the world of hurt that are suffering from things like PTSD and other issues. If you're looking for an organization to support, like I do monthly, and you don't want to have to worry about them embarrassing you, guys, thewoundedblue.org. That's the way to go. And also, shout out to Gulls.com, ComplianTechnologies.com, Gunlearn.com, and Medicare.life, SafewayRecruiting, and TwoBells.com. We'll see you guys back tomorrow at 12 noon Eastern.